The question of the week this week on If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. This might be this. Could the founding fathers, were they to come back to life today and throw their hats in the ring in the presidential race of 2012, could they get elected? How would the media treat James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington? How would they treat George Mason? Would they be labeled as extremists? Surely the Tea Party would love them. They'd love them. They'd love them. But imagine what the Democrats would say about them. Imagine what the GOP establishment types would say about them. They'd call them far too radical. They'd call them dangerous, reckless. All kind of nasty things would be said about some of the greatest men that ever drew breath and men that we owe everything we have in a country to. Think about that, my friends. Think about that. Welcome, my friends, to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. I am your host, Doug Hagan. And yes, this show will be on the Chimpsy Radio Network. Chimpsy Radio back for the month of June. We'll see what happens after that. Hopefully, that last couple weeks, just a minor bump in the road. The road to cyber radio greatness that Chimpsy's has been on for a long time, and I'm very proud to be a part of. Now, I'm going to talk a lot about the presidential race this week, a lot about the candidates. I'm going to try to break some down, why I like them, why I don't like others. Also going to talk about, finally, someone has solved the Mideast peace crisis. Finally, someone has done it. All of that and much, 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 much more starts right now, my friends. Welcome, my friends, to the 52nd edition of If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. I guess this would be my one-year anniversary show. I guess so. But I am Doug Hagan. You know me from the dailygator.wordpress.com, the Daily Gator blog. I host with the phenomenally talented and irritating to liberals, Edward Daly. And yes, this show is back on Chimpsy Radio. Thank you to David Cholesterol and all the other hosts. Now let's get into this. Let's get into, before I get into the presidents, presidential racers, the people seeking the Republican nomination. I think we know who the Democrats are going to throw at us again. But let's talk about the Mideast. because finally someone has solved the Mideast peace crisis. This is the foolproof plan. It comes from Andrew Klavan, a very good author. Got some of his books recently. Good stuff. Good writer. Funny guy. You know him from Pajamas Media. Does Klavan on the Culture videos. He is a national treasure. He is absolutely one of my favorite commentators on the right. And he has solved the Mideast peace crisis. We hear about two-state solution, this solution, that solution. How about this? How about the one-state solution? Basically, Andrew Klavan says, let's take the Middle East and turn it all over to the Jews. Let Israel move and beat the entire Middle East. Let the Middle East be one big Israel. You know what you'd have? You'd have tolerance. You'd have religious diversity, religious tolerance, religious freedom, freedom of speech. You'd have women being treated as equals. You would not have the destitute condition so many of the people live in. You wouldn't have the evil Sharia law. You wouldn't have the evil despots in charge. You would soon have, my friends, a much improved Middle East. And I know when I say that, the left's heads are going to explode. Excuse me, their heads are going to fall off. They despise and loathe Israel. They are so morally retarded, they cannot figure out. For the life of them, they cannot figure out that Israel isn't the problem. Israel never has been the problem. Israel wants peace. Israel is a free country. And look at the cesspool around Israel. That cesspool and the leadership that makes it a cesspool, that's the problem in the Middle East. And that will upset people like Jimmy Carter. Mr. I love Hamas. He's always accusing Israel of being, you know, religious apartheid. Jimmy Carter wouldn't know religious apartheid if it bit him on his ass. But Jimmy Carter wouldn't know reality if it bit him on his ass. Jimmy Carter knows how to do one thing. Two things, actually. Believe anything any terrorist group, or despot, or evil dictator tells him. And then proceed to get on his knees and kiss their ass. That's what Jimmy Carter is. He, as Michael Medved calls him, the useless one. Second worst president ever in our history. Obama has surpassed him, I believe. But it's important to remember, it really is, that Jimmy Carter and people of his ilk, they have this deep, deep loathing of Israel. And you look at them and you say, why do you hate the one country that's good in that region, really good, really an ally, and you try to suck up to all the others that aren't our friends and that are doing nothing but trying to destroy Israel? Why can't you see that? It's moral retardation. That's what it is. Now, speaking of moral retardation, certainly not as bad, but there's a couple stories about the nanny state. I always like to talk about the nanny state because it is a creeping... It's a creeping deterioration of American values, of American greatness. One story, actually both stories, come from North Carolina. The city of Charlotte, North Carolina, has been levying fines on a local church. What has this church done? What transgression has this church committed? Well, improper pruning of myrtle trees. That's it. They're improperly pruning. Doesn't mean they're doing bad things with prunes for regularity's sake. That means they're pruning trees in a fashion not fit for state approval, statist approval. The Charlotte Observer notes that the church was fined $100 per branch cut for excessive pruning, bringing the violation to $4,000. For you Florida State grads, that means there were 40 branches involved. I just couldn't believe it when I heard about it. Sales, the pastor of the church, said, we trim our trees back every 3 years all over our property, and this is the first time we've been fined. The fine will be dropped, if the church replaces each of the improperly pruned trees, said Tom Johnson, who's a senior urban forester for City of Charlotte Land Development Division, when they are non-repairable, when they have been pruned beyond repair. Beyond repair would be non-repairable, sir, but forget that. We will ask them to be replaced, Johnson said. We do that for a number of reasons, but mainly because they are going to come back unhealthy and create a dangerous situation down the road. True, the dangers caused in society by angry trees that have been improperly pruned, snatching children from the cribs, beating people up in alleys. Those improperly pruned trees are a danger, my friends. Don't forget that. There's another nanny here in North Carolina. North Carolina is having a burger battle. North Carolina, the state legislature of North Carolina, doesn't think you're smart enough to know how you want your burger cooked. Now, personally, I think people who eat burgers rare, medium rare, are idiots. It's disgusting. It's despicable. It's nasty. And I've heard, well, you take the flavor out. No, baloney. Baloney. I've eaten a burger, bitten in a burger medium rare, I've bitten a burger medium well. Look, a burger is a burger. It's better medium well, trust me. Because I'm not an animal in the field, and I don't want to eat blood. Excuse me. But it's your business if you want to do that. If a restaurant wants to sell you a burger medium rare, you want to order it medium rare, you want to eat it medium rare, and you want to take the necessary risk involved to your health because of pathogens that may be in there, then that's your business, not the state's business. That's the problem with nanny staters. They don't know where the line is between their business and your business. They don't know where that divide is. They don't have any idea what a boundary is. A boundary is something you shouldn't cross without permission. But the statists don't realize that. You got statements from Nanny Bloomberg up in New York recently that said basically politicians, elected officials, representatives should lead, should tell their constituents what they're going to do. They shouldn't listen to their constituents. In a nutshell. In other words, you're too stupid to figure out what you need. You need people like Michael Bloomberg and these burger banners in North Carolina and snooping into your trees to see if you've pruned them properly. And snooping into your favorite restaurant, seeing if they're cooking the burger the way not you want it, but the way they want it. People like Michael Bloomberg are a cancer on this country. They are an absolute cancer. They would destroy everything this country's about if left unchecked. Now let's go back to, remember I talked about Israel, the one state solution, giving Israel control of the entire Middle East. What is the problem with Sharia law? There were some people defending Sharia law, might have been on Daily Kos. And the person who wrote the column said, well, I don't know anything about Islam and Sharia law, but I'm defending it. It's stupid. That's how stupid the left is. They're so afraid to judge anything, unless it's conservative or traditional American values. They hate those things. They can judge them all day long. But anything evil, anything destitute of any moral goodness, they can't judge. Hence, they can't judge Sharia law. What's wrong with Sharia law? I'll give you a perfect example via the Gateway Pundit blog. A 19-year-old girl, a Muslim girl, in the Ukraine, entered a beauty contest. The price she paid under Sharia law, and there's not even Sharia law in the Ukraine, but these are people acting in the name of Sharia law, which they dream one day, I guess, will come to the Ukraine. They stoned this young girl to death. Think about how evil it is that a 19-year-old girl enters a beauty contest and pays with her life in one of the most brutally violent and painful ways and horrifying ways, I'm sure you can, for doing nothing more than being a normal 19-year-old girl. The Daily Mail reported the story. A teenage Muslim girl was stoned to death under Sharia law after taking part in a beauty contest in the Ukraine. Katya Korin, 19, was found dead in a village in the Crimea region near her home. Friends said she liked wearing fashionable clothes and had come in seventh in a beauty contest. Her battered body was buried in a forest and was found a week after she disappeared. Now, police have opened a murder probe and are investigating claims that three, hold on to your hats, this may stun you, three Muslim youth killed her, claiming her death was justified under Islam. One of the three, named as a 16-year-old boy, is under arrest and told police she had violated the laws of Sharia. So this little piece of trash bastard, this little jihadi starter kit, and two of his friends decided to stone this young girl to death. How sick is a 16-year-old even think about that? You know, a normal 16-year-old boy is trying to figure out how to get a date with this older woman, the 19-year-old, not how to kidnap her, stone her to death, and bury her in the woods because she violated Sharia law. It is sick. Sick beyond sick. And remember, the left defends this crap. Another thing the left defends, they used to deny death penalties existed under Obamacare, under socialized medicine. They're necessarily there. They have to be under socialized medicine. The left refused to believe it. They denied they were there. Now they're singing the praises of death panels. The latest one is Charles Chucky Schumer, scumbag from New York. This is from CNN News. Republicans need to come up with their own throw granny off the cliff ad. That's because the Paul Ryan plan to cut the budget deficit. And he had touched Medicare. And his plan doesn't affect people who don't want to get off Medicare. It only affects people who would want to. That's too long to get into right now, but they made a throw the granny off the cliff ad where this Paul Ryan lookalike throws this lady in a wheelchair off a cliff. Because that's all Democrats do. They don't have any ideas. They don't have anything original to add. It's just fear and smear. It's scare old people. Paul Ryan's going to make you eat dog food and you won't be able to get dialysis. It'll smother you in your sleep and then throw your dead body off a cliff because he's a Republican. And that's what Republicans do. That's the Democrat talking points. Talk about a despicable bunch of weasels. But there's an Obama lookalike to this ad. $500 billion in cuts from Medicare to pay for Obamacare, the most wonderful legislation ever. Obamacare, the one that's going to save us all from everything bad. But to pay for Obamacare, not only are they going to break our back with taxes and regulations, no. They're also going to cut $500 billion from Medicare. Or, the story says, they can use Charles Schumer, who advocated on NBC Today, rationing health care for sick senior citizens. According to CNN News, Schumer proposed a reform that would ration health care for sick seniors by telling doctors the Medicare system would pay them, listen closely, pay them a single flat fee for treating a particular illness as opposed to paying for the specific services needed to treat a particular patient. So in other words, what the doctor and his medical knowledge says doesn't matter. What science says, what medical science says doesn't matter. It's going to be determined on a flat fee. Oh, you've got ovarian cancer, you've got a broken hip, whatever it is, this is the money you get, period. Once that money's out, so sorry, see you at the funeral home. So think about that. That's rationing healthcare, which equates to what? Death panels. That's it. Now, this system proposed by Schumer would give a healthcare provider a financial incentive to withhold care from sick seniors because each and every service or treatment they provided would cut into their profit margin or cause them to lose money. Think about that. Think about what Schumer's proposing. Think, people. If you have a Democrat friend, First question is why. Second is, great, go talk to them and say, look what your party is proposing. Look what your party's about. Keep talking to them. Keep reaching. Maybe one day we can get more and more Democrats to come into the light and accept that their party has become a cesspool of leftism. It is despicable what the Democratic Party has become. I bet you Harry Truman wouldn't be very proud. FDR would, I'm sure. But not all the stories I talk about here are political or about health care or death panels or doom and gloom and dark news. No. I bring you uplifting stories about a heroic woman who offered to find lost children in the debris of a horrible accident. A wonderful woman, a saint. Oh, wait. She was drunk when she did it. Oh, still, she's a saint. She drank a bit, but she wanted $1,000 to do it. Maybe she wasn't such a saint after all, but okay. The woman who was drunk and wanted $1,000 to help lost children in the debris of a horrible accident was the person who caused the horrible accidents by crashing her car into the house. That's right. According to the Weekly Vice and from my blog, a 32-year-old Port Richey woman was jailed Saturday after she allegedly became intoxicated, crashed into a family's home, and then offered to search for the couple's children for $1,000. According to the Pasco County Sheriff's Office, three adults and four children were asleep in her home around 2 a.m. when they were awakened by what sounded like an explosion. When they ran towards the sound, they were shocked to see their house in shambles and tailgate lights glowing in the haze of smoke. The woman had driven her 1998 Honda Accord completely through the home, destroying a front hall, the living room, the dining room, and the bedroom where two small children, ages 4 and 10, were sleeping. The homeowner's brother-in-law was sleeping in the living room on an air mattress. He escaped with cuts and scratches on his face from flying debris. The lady then stumbles out of her car, drunk. When she realized that the parents could not find two young children who were sleeping in the bedroom, she offered to help find them for $1,000. The victims told the woman, "Get back in your car and stay put until police arrived." The children were later found terrified but unharmed. No serious injuries were reported. The lady also reportedly hit a parked car. She was leaving the Lane Globe Bowling Alley. If you ever find yourself in a place called the Lane Globe Bowling Alley and you're drinking, just end it all right there. Just end it all right there. It all starts at places called Lane Glow Bowling Alleys late at night when you're drinking. Mix in a Honda Accord and a house with a bunch of people in it. You know what's going to happen, folks. You also knew what was going to happen, or at least a lot of us did, when we elected Barack Obama to be our president. We looked at his record, we looked at his rhetoric, and economic news we didn't think would become good. But, according to Ed, my blogging partner, Ed Daly's other site, Daily Benefactor News, it's official. Worst jobs president since the Great Depression. Has overseen the worst housing downturn since the Great Depression. Wow. He really has done a great job, hasn't he? He has done such a great job with the economy. It gets worse and worse. And the media, I love the media, they always say every time they come report bad economic news or housing downturns or higher unemployment, it's always this word, unexpectedly. You think they come to expect this by now? I mean, look, a woman drives a car into your home after drinking at the Logue Lane Bowling Alley. Good grief. That's unexpected. But if it happens every week on Friday night, pretty soon you learn to expect a person driving a Honda Accord to your house. And let's face it, this drunken woman driving her car into a home and destroying the home That's kind of a good symbolism, isn't it, for the Obama administration and their economic policies? Haven't they gotten into the 1988 Honda of Obamanomics, drunk, disorderly, and fresh from the flow lane, bowling alley of Democratic ideals, and they've driven the son of a bitch right through the home that is the American economy. And they continue to do the same thing, and this is not going to help. This news here, the Department of Commerce has a new head. Yes, a new chief, a new person in charge. And this person, this will stun you too, I'm sure, is a big supporter of one of the worst policies that our economy could ever face, cap and trade. Cap and trade is one of these deals where if you use bad energy, coal or fossil fuels, you're going to create emissions and these greenhouse gases. And even though global warming is complete and utter bullshit, we know that now, they're still going to make you pay. See, the liberal line is you can wreck the earth as long as you pay money. Somehow paying money does away with the damage you supposedly do to the environment by using these greenhouse gases. Makes no sense. But the new head of the Department of Commerce, John Bryson, was nominated. He's been nominated. He hasn't been approved yet by President Obama today to head the Department of Commerce. Once said it was incredibly important that the United States pass cap-and-trade legislation and that America needed to become a global leader in combating man-made global warming. I regard it as incredibly important that the United States comes forth in this year with federal climate change legislation as a foundation for moving ahead, Bryson told the UN International Energy Conference in late August of 2009. I think we in the U.S. have an obligation to assist in significant ways in providing leadership in this community of nations that you represent in addressing energy, climate change. That's bad. It gets better. Or worser, I guess you'd say. Bryson, who is a co-founder of the liberal environmentalist group National Resource Defense Council, doesn't sound good, does it? Was most recently a member of the United Nations Advisory Group on Energy and Climate Change, a panel of scientific and industry experts tasked with providing advice on combating global warming. Just another Marxist getting lots of love from Obama. Obama love. Obama love, folks. Now, there's lots to get to. I got some music coming up. Last week, I have a screw-up I did. Last week, I said I had music from Stevie Ray Vaughan, which I thought I did. Actually, it wasn't. It was another artist. It was Motley Crue. This week, it actually is Stevie Ray Vaughan. I was just forgot what track I'd loaded on before I began recording the show, so my apologies. Yes, even I make mistakes, but unlike Democrats, I admit when I make mistakes. I admit it. I admit it, folks. Now, I have a question. I don't have a weird sex story this week. You know what? I'm gonna wait for that story. I want to wait. I want to talk about, real quick before the music here, the middle school yearbook. There's a list on there of the five worst people in history. Adolf Hitler's on it, Osama bin Laden's on it, Charles Manson's on it. And you're thinking in your head, what, Pol Pot, Mao, Stalin, maybe. No. The last two names on the list, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. This is from Arkansas's Russellville Middle School. The school's yearbook featured a list of the five top worst people of all times. And how in the hell does the left really think this? These are the same idiots that blame Israel when Israel's attacked by terrorists in the Middle East. It's Israel's fault. These are people that have no moral basis. Now, Superintendent Randall Williams calls that list an oversight. It's not an oversight. It was done deliberately by somebody trying to be cute or trying to be funny or trying to be whatever. Just say what it was. It was nothing more than some leftists getting their little ideological orgasm on by throwing Cheney and Bush's name in with Adolf Hitler. And notice how many times the left makes lists of the worst people, even if they don't include Bush and Cheney. Notice how many times they don't include Stalin or Lenin or Mao or Pol Pot or other communists. The left has a soft spot for communism. They just can't compare. They can see the evil in Nazism, but not in communism. Again, moral retardation. Now the music, my friends. Sit back and enjoy Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'll be back after this. And welcome back, my friends. Greatness of Stevie Ray Vaughan there for you. What a tragedy. We lost him, 21 years ago in a helicopter crash. Great guitar player. And tragically, he was just getting off drugs and booze and other things, really straightening his life up. A lot of great music that we were deprived of because of his all-too-early departure. Now, before I get into talking about some of the presidential candidates, I want to give you a couple other examples of why it's so important that we get any Republican in instead of Barack Obama. The Obama administration has told us, remember they bailed out the Chrysler and GM, and that all the money's been paid back, we're all good, man. See, we're geniuses, see how we saved the auto industry, got the money back, and everything's good, right? Well, according to The Blaze, the Obama administration said Wednesday that the government will lose about $14 billion in taxpayer funds from the bailout of the U.S. auto industry. Wait, I thought we got all the money back. In a report from the President's National Economic Council, officials said that figure is down. It's down from the 60% the Treasury Department originally estimated the government would lose following its $80 billion bailout of Chrysler and GM back in 2009. The report's release coincides with the administration's effort to tout the bailout's role in the revitalization of the U.S. auto industry after last week's announcement that Chrysler is repaying $5.9 billion in U.S. loans on $1.7 billion loan from the Canadian government. These payments cover most of the federal bailout money that saved the company after it nearly ran out of cash and went through a government-led bankruptcy. GM has previously announced that it had repaid a little more than half of the $50 billion it received in Treasury in federal aid, and Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, you know, TurboTax guy, said U.S. auto companies are now at the forefront of a comeback in American manufacturing. We cannot guarantee their success, and at some point they may stumble, but we've given them a better shot, Geithner said in an opinion piece in Wednesday's edition of the Washington Post. While we will not get back all of our investments in the industry, we will recover much more than most predicted and far sooner. Why won't you get all of it back? Why wouldn't the government? Again, it's not the government's money, it's our money. Okay? If you loan somebody money and you don't expect to get it back, that's your business. But if you loan someone else's money to someone, don't you expect to get it all back so you can get it to where it originally came from? It would make sense, wouldn't it? You would think. Now, a lot of people are throwing their hats in the ring for the Republican nomination. There's some that have bowed out already. Mitch Daniels, I didn't really get a chance to warm to Mitch Daniels, to really look at his record, etc., etc. Mike Pence, I was very disappointed he didn't run. But you've got some of those that have bowed out. You've got some that are throwing their hat in the ring. They're never going to go anywhere. Ron Paul, it's like a running joke. He's like Ralph Nader. A lot smarter than Ralph Nader, but Ralph Nader throws his hat in the ring every 4 years, and it's a little circus for him. Maybe it's an ego trip. I don't know. But Ron Paul is wasting his time and his supporters' money and energy running for president. You've got Donald Trump thankfully bowed out, even though he still is hinting that he may, if he doesn't front a Republican he likes, he may bring his bad hair and form the Bad Hair political party and run as an independent. Just go away, dude. Okay, you're a publicity whore. We get it. Just go away, Trump. Mike Huckabee said he won't run. Thank God for that. Even though it wouldn't surprise me if he weasels his way back in. He's just that much of a, again, like Trump, a publicity whore. Then you've got some others that won't win. Peter King of New York. I admire him as a congressman. He ain't got a chance. Rudy Giuliani's thinking of running again. I don't know why. He ran one of the worst campaigns in the history of mankind back in 2008. He has no prayer. Newt Gingrich, why he got in, but he is absolutely sunk like a stone. Just too many things he does agitate other conservative Republicans. He doesn't have a prayer. Then you've got people who may get in. I'm very excited about the possibility of running. Rick Perry, my governor, I said last week on a show, he may be able to take the establishment support and the Tea Party support and the base conservative base support and meld those two. He could be very dangerous should he enter the race, and I have a feeling he will. The other is Jim DeMint, who I admire Jim DeMint greatly. He would be a force. And I don't really think he'll run, just a personal opinion, just a personal prediction. I don't think he'll run. But if he ran, consider you've got Iowa, the caucus, and you got the New Hampshire primary. What's the third big stone there? The South Carolina primary. Where's Jim DeMint from? South Carolina. That could be a game changer. But I do not think he'll run. I think Perry will. I don't think DeMint will. Sarah Palin we keep talking about. I go back and forth on whether I think she'll run. At times, I'm sure she will. I thought at the beginning of this bus tour that the liberals and media and some of the conservatives, Republican establishment, don't confuse them with conservatives. The Republican establishment are so wetting their pants over. Sometimes I think she will, sometimes I think she won't. And people always say, well, she doesn't have the experience. She has high negatives. She's a very polarizing figure. That's true. The big doubt I have personally about her ability to succeed would be the polarization question. A lot of people, the media has done their damnedest to paint her as a bimbo, as an idiot, completely unqualified. And unfortunately, some of the GOP establishment have said things about her that also lead people to that belief. She's no dummy. She's a very bright lady. Big fan of hers. But the one thing I keep going back to, Democrats and the media have done their best to absolutely destroy any chances she would ever run or win. They've spent so much energy and time, and they're still doing it, still trying to demean her. And they keep saying, oh, they'd love it if she ran. They'd love it, yeah, because Barack Obama would just destroy her. If you're a political party, it's like a sporting event. If you're in the championship round and you're looking to see the other who you're going to face, you want the weaker of the two, don't you? That team you think will beat you, you don't want to play them. You're afraid of them. If you're afraid of them, you don't want to play them. You don't want to go against them in an election. And the left is terrified of Sarah Palin. They're absolutely terrified. And Howard Dean came out this week and said, you know what, she can beat Obama. And Andrew Sullivan, who used to be a person who used to call himself a conservative before he became obsessed with Sarah Palin's uterus. It's a sad story. He's one of these people that Trig is really Sarah Palin's baby, and he's been obsessed over this. He is a totally complete douchebag. But he has said Sarah Palin can beat Barack Obama. So I think the left is so terrified of her, you have to consider her because there's a reason they're afraid of her. There are reasons there. And I don't know. I truly think if people got to know Sarah Palin, really, the more they get to know her, the more people like her. And the higher number of people like her. And the higher number of people dismiss this idiotic notion that she's an idiot. Because certainly she is not. But again, whether she'll run or not, I really can't say. I go back and forth on it. My deepest instinct is that she will not. That she will be the kingmaker. And again, they go back to Rick Perry. She would be a big supporter of Rick Perry, I think. Because they have a pretty good relationship. Now, the people who are expected to jump in the race, John Huntsman's another name that comes up. John Huntsman is a moderate Republican, meaning he's a rhino. He has come out in support of cap and trade. He's come out and been in favor of health insurance mandates. In other words, forcing you, the government forcing you to buy health insurance. I don't think he can get traction when a lot of the establishment will like him. He's a good-looking guy, speaks well. He's your professional politician. He looks like the professional politician, unlike Palin, who doesn't. You know, she doesn't look like, she doesn't play by the rules. There was a big-time GOP head who said earlier this week about her bus tour that she's not playing by the rules. She's not paying her dues the way she's supposed to. So at some point, she's got to expect to pay a price for that. In other words, she ain't playing by their rules. The media's or the GOP establishments. That's a big problem for her. Or is it? Because this year, this election, 2012, more than any other in my memory, is going to be about not having a Washington insider or career politician run. I think that will be a deterrent to have that experience rather than a plus. And understand the importance of experience, but let's face facts. Even if you've been a governor, you have that experience. Even if you've run businesses and been a governor, you have that experience. Five people on planet Earth have the experience of being president. That's it. Only 43 people have ever been president. It's not like you have a big pool of people with presidential experience, and being president is unlike anything else. So I tend to downplay the experience factor and all that. So I don't think Huntsman will do well if he gets in, and if he does, he's going to be one of the dinosaurs. Even though you've probably never heard his name, his big claim to fame was being ambassador to China at one point. But you've never heard the guy. And once you hear him speak and his record really starts to show, I don't think he'll be a factor. Thaddeus McCotter has been rumored to be maybe throw his hat into the ring. Great congressman from Michigan. He is featured on my blog quite often. A funny guy, humorous, direct to the point. Not a BS guy. The Tea Party types love him. Real conservatives love him. I don't think he'll win. I don't think he'll enter. If he does, I don't think he really stands a chance. Just because there's too many other big fish out there. Michelle Bachmann's continued to be rumored that she might run. I don't know how she would do either. I like Michelle Bachmann. That lady has class. She has guts. She has spirit. She has conviction. Very much like Sarah Palin in a lot of ways, except she's got more political experience, obviously. I think the media has done a hatchet job on her, too, and it would get a lot worse were she to run and actually enter the race and do well. Then you've got the wild card, the man I am supporting, fully supporting, gladly supporting, heartily supporting, Herman Cain. And the big knock on Herman Cain is, well, he's... doesn't have the experience. He's not a politician. Doesn't have political experience. He's never worked with Democrats. Herman Cain wants to do what's best for America. There are three reasons you want to be president. There's the kid who grew up always wanting that burning ambition, burning desire to be president. That's their lifelong dream, to be president of the United States. I don't know if you necessarily want to elect that person. Then you've got the person who's in it for personal power, for the prestige, for the position. I should be president kind of person. I definitely don't think they should get your vote. The person I think should get your vote is a person who wants to serve, who really wants to be president because not no burning ambition to be one. Look at one of our greatest presidents, Washington. He didn't want the job. But look at the great example he set once he became president. The person who wants to serve really wants it for the right reasons. They don't want to be president because, hey, look at me, I'm president. I can ride in a limo all the time. And they're not in it for that. They're in it because they think they can do things the country needs. And they're going to serve. They're going to listen to the people. Because we talk a lot about representative republic, and you have your constituents if you're a congressman, senator. The president has everyone for constituent, everyone in this country. Herman Cain is that guy. I don't think, not that he's not an ambitious person, he's been successful in business, Don't forget that, but he doesn't want to be president for the position. I think he wants it to serve, and I like his direct answers. Of all the people I've heard interview, and we had the one debate in South Carolina, he's the one guy who actually says what's on his mind. Very eloquent fashion, well-spoken. I would love to see him against Obama in a debate. He's one of the ones I think would absolutely eradicate Obama. Rick Perry's another. Sarah Palin has an issue with debates because of her voice. That's not fair. It's stupid. But because she has a little bit of a grating voice that irritates a lot, that would deduct points. Again, that's not fair. That's a stupid reason to judge, but it's a realistic thing to look at. Like Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, not the best speaking voice. Look, if you want to go listen to a speech for 30 minutes, it ain't Hillary Clinton. That's not your first choice. That's one reason she lost to Obama, is her presence, her voice, her presentation, very shrill, irritating to the ears. That's one big advantage Obama had over her. And it's a realistic thing you have to look at. Unfortunately, I hate it. That's a deduction for Palin. It really is. A great speaking voice makes a difference. Reagan had a great speaking voice. George W. Bush didn't. He overcame it, obviously, and did a fairly good job as president. But that's one thing that led people to think, oh, he's stupid. Listen to him. That's something Herman Cain doesn't have a problem with. That's something another guy I want to talk about, Tim Pawlenty. I guess he and Mitt Romney are probably the two of the people in the race right now. They're the two favorites. They're the two that the establishment thinks are in there. The establishment GOP I'm talking about here. They're the 1A and 1B. Unless someone else gets in that would change their mind. Governor Perry. Senator DeMint. But Tim Pawlenty, governor of Minnesota, has done a good job. I like the guy. I like what he says. Again, there's a knock on him that he's boring. He doesn't have this charisma. I don't care if someone has charisma or not. I don't want a president to give me goosebumps, okay? I don't want one to kiss me on the ear. I don't want a president that makes me feel good. I want a president that respects the Constitution, obeys the Constitution, defends the Constitution, and works their butt off to get this country back to where the constitutional principles should have us. Because the further away we get from the Constitution, the more screwed up we get. It never fails to amaze me. You hear these talking heads, these political pundits, these experts, these media analysts, and they say, what's wrong with America? And they say this and this and this. Not one has ever said the basic, most essential truth. We have moved away from constitutional principles, moved away from our founding principles, and the further we get away, the more screwed up we get. It's simple. It's direct. It's to the point. It's something Herman Cain would say. It's not something Tim Pawlenty would say, I don't think, at least to that degree. But I like Pawlenty. I would not have a problem pulling the lever for him in November of 2012, nor would I have a problem with pulling the lever for Palin or Romney or Palin, Bachman, any of the ones I've talked about. Huntsman, I don't like. I don't care for him. I don't care for Gingrich. But I don't think those two have a shot. Realistically, I don't. Now, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is... I have questions about him. I think his business sense, I think he is so far ahead of Obama, it's not even close. Okay, not even close. I think any of these Republican candidates or would-be candidates are so far ahead of Obama economically. And that's the number one issue next year, make no mistake. It's the economy, stupid. But Romney falls into the category I talked about. He spent so much of his own money in 2008 and lost. And now he's running again. He has this overwhelming desire to be president. Why? Is it to serve, or is it because he feels entitled to it, or he feels like this should be his. I'm not sure. But so much about Romney to like. But the big albatross for him is Romney Care. The state-run health care in Massachusetts, where he was governor, it's not turned out very well, and he won't admit to it. That's a problem. Mitt Romney should have come out of meeting and said, you know what, especially now with Obamacare, so many people hate Obamacare. They look at Romney, they listen to him and say, that sounds good, that sounds good. But what, Romney Care? Obamacare? They equate the two, and he's making a huge mistake not disavowing it. And an even bigger mistake, still to some degree embracing it. And look, there's a huge difference between a state doing it, putting maybe a state referendum together to see what the people of a state want, and doing it on a federal level. Massive differences. But Romney Care was a mistake. Mitt Romney should admit to it. He's also come out recently and flirted with put his little toe in the global warming climate change pool there, saying he believes that man has an impact on global warming and that we're warming. And again, Mitt, what are you doing? All you're doing there is pandering to people who would never vote for you to begin with, and you're alienating people who might vote for you. But again, if he got the nomination, I would gladly support him over Obama. But Mitt's a question mark. He's also a question mark for this reason. He's a good-looking guy, but he doesn't seem to resonate with people. You know, with his great speaking voice, he can give a great speech, good-looking guy, has his presence about him, his successes. You think people would say, wow. But they don't. There's something about him that worries me in a general election. With Palin, it's the polarizing factor. With Michelle Bachmann, the same thing. With Romney, it's the... he's almost too smooth sometimes. He's almost too perfect. A lot of people look at that and say, there's something wrong with that. I mean, he was a Republican Obama in 2008. Right? Good speaker, all these things. But he didn't catch fire like Obama. A lot of stupid people voted. That's one reason. But that's my take. I'm still supporting Herman Cain. Very excited about the possibility of DeMint and Perry running. Like Tim Pawlenty. I love Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin. I wish Mike Pence would have run. But of all those candidates right now, to me, Herman Cain is the model to win the presidency because of the Tea Party ties and because he is not a career politician. Of the people not in the race that I think would win if they got in, it's Rick Perry. Is Rick Perry easily. Of the people I think who will win right now, I would have to say it's Pawlenty or Romney. But I'm still holding out for Herman Cain. I'm not giving up on that. Raising Cain in 2012, I still think it could very well happen. Now, to close the show, I have a question. I've been neglected as a child. I missed out on something as a schoolboy. And the title of this post on my blog is, why didn't they have these field trips when I was in eighth grade? I feel cheated that during my junior high days, I never got to take a field trip that went to Hooters. And I'm angry about this. Somehow, this made news, which seems a bit odd since no parents have complained, writes Jamie Wearing Fool. I doubt any of the boys did either. For one group of Berwick School District 8th graders, a recent field trip to Baltimore included lunch at Hooters, a restaurant better known for its busty waitresses than its food. Hooters has food? The Berwick Middle School students were visiting the National Aquarium last week. Chaperones took them to various restaurants for lunch because the group of 100 was too large for a single place. One group of 15 to 20 students reportedly ended up at Hooters. Superintendent Wayne Brookhart said that while he wishes the group's food chaperones had chosen another restaurant, he's not received any complaints from parents. I doubt that, except for the dads who said, hey, I wanted to be a chaperone. I wanted to be a chaperone. I couldn't go. But I was cheated. I didn't go to Hooters at eighth grade. I did, however, go to Clearwater, Florida, the first Hooters ever. I've been to that one several times, being a Florida native. Something about Hooters. It pisses off feminists. I love Hooters for that reason. I love it for other eye-appealing reasons, obviously. But I just wanted y'all to know that despite my being cheated of going to Hooters as a child, as a schoolboy on field trips, I'm still here to do this show for each and every week. Good night. God bless. Remember, if you're left, you just ain't right. Remember to support Chimpsy Radio. And I'll talk to y'all next week. Take it easy.